Chapter 7. Sheriff Stilinski is working through a stack of witness reports while he eats a turkey sandwich one-handed. Low-fat mayo on whole grain bread. What did he do to deserve this? And glances up as Mike Whittemore, the DA, comes in. They have an appointment, and Sheriff Stilinski hastily shoves the papers and the sandwich aside. They spend half an hour going over some charges for a group of teenagers who had been caught vandalizing and shoplifting from stores around town. As Whittemore turns to leave, he says, "So what are you going to do about that whole thing with Derek Hale?" "How do you mean?" Stilinski asks, frowning faintly. "Well, you know," Whittemore says, "is your kid going to refuse him or what?" Sheriff Stilinski folds his hands on top of his desk and says, "Stiles is taking some time to get to know Derek before making a decision, and I think that's the right thing to do in his case. He's still young, and he wasn't on the list, so he's not rushing into anything." Whittemore frowns. "And you're okay with Hale using your son like that?" Stilinski's eyebrow twitches, but he deliberately stays calm. "I'm not sure I get your drift, Mike." At this, the attorney shifts a little, clearly uncomfortable with the situation. "Well, you know, everyone knows that he picked Stiles to keep from having to choose a real mate, and it just seems a shame that he would do that to your son." "Excuse me," Stilinski says, "but everyone does not know that, because I certainly don't know that. Everyone may be making an assumption, but that's not the same thing. As far as I can see, Derek made an excellent choice, and if Stiles decides he's comfortable with it, I'll back him 100%. And that's really all I have to say about the matter." Whittemore clears his throat. "Well, I'll show myself out," he says, and heads for the door. "Jackass," Stilinski mutters once he's gone. But it's hard to be irritated. He's not the first person to have said that, or something similar. A whole rash of people offered their sympathies at the cruel trick that had been played on Stiles just after it had happened. Sheriff Stilinski is pretty sure that one of their neighbors started the rumors, and as soon as he narrows down who it was, he's going to have some harsh words to say about it. But since then, everyone's just accepted the theory that Derek is only using Stiles as a cover to keep from having to choose a real mate. Some of them think it's an agreement of mutual benefit, wherein Stiles gets the prestige and the protection in return for going along with it, but most people assume that Stiles was forced into it, or worse, doesn't realize what's happening. Every single one of these theories angers Sheriff Stilinski in a different way, but he keeps his mouth shut as much as he can, offering only his own opinions on the subject, careful never to speak for Stiles. Until Stiles makes a final decision, there's nothing more he can say about it, and he's beginning to think that's going to take a while. He's just finished his sandwich and is giving a disgusted glance at the celery sticks and chunks of cauliflower that had accompanied his lunch when his secretary pages him. "Sheriff Stilinski, Derek Hale is here to see you." Sheriff Stilinski frowns a little at this, but replies, "Have him come on back," and shoves the bag of vegetables into a drawer to try to forget about them. Derek comes in a moment later, but pauses in the doorway, catching the smell of fresh food in the air. "Did I interrupt your lunch, Sheriff? I could come back later." Stilinski shakes his head and waves him in. "I usually work through lunch anyway. And call me Tom. What's on your mind?" Derek closes the door behind him. It won't stop the other wolves in the station from overhearing, if they happen to be there, but it signals that the conversation, should they overhear it, is to be treated as private. He gives a little huff and slumps into a chair. "Stiles, what else? In the argument we had last night." "Well, this is the first I've heard of it," Stilinski says. "But then he was asleep by the time I got home, so maybe you should give me the highlights." After a moment, Derek nods. He skips some of the squirrel guy moments, mostly because he doesn't think Stiles ever wants his father to hear the phrase, "the weirdest boner." He's noticed that humans can be strange around sex, and given Stiles' age and the sheriff's previous comments about wolfsbane bullets, it seems best to avoid that particular subject. "I was going along with our original agreement. I swear I was, until he said that about how it's okay if I'm using him." Tom sighs and rubs a hand over his hair. Oh, boy. It's a can of worms and no mistake. I think I can see where Stiles is coming from, but I may need a little more information. This bond thing that mates have. I've heard about it, but obviously never experienced it. How aware of it is Stiles?
I don't know.
Derek looks away, uncertain. We always have it with our mates, but it's not an instantaneous thing. When we find the right person, it forms immediately, but it still takes time to grow stronger.
He rubs his hands over his thighs nervously.
Uncle Peter thinks Stiles can feel it. He would know best. His mate, Olivia, was human. His voice catches a little on her name, but then steadies.
I can feel it, but I'm still pretty crappy at sorting it out.
Okay, Sheriff Stilinski nods thoughtfully. My guess is that he can feel it, at least some, and that he's not sure what to do with it. He wants to believe this is real, but you also have to remember that he's a 16-year-old boy who's never had a serious relationship before.
Derek nods after a moment. Because while we only ever plan to have one serious relationship in our lives, and it wouldn't bother us if that happened young, that must be really weird for a human. And Stiles wasn't on the list, so it wasn't something he planned to have to think about.
Tom raises a finger. Stiles thinks about everything. And he was on the list last year. And we had talked about it, seriously, in a way that I'm guessing most of the teenagers didn't. I made sure that he wanted to be on the list, that he was willing, before he signed up last time.
But he didn't sign up this time. Something must have changed, Derek replies. If he thought it through, why is it bothering him?
What changed and what's bothering him are the same thing, Tom says. Namely, that a bunch of people told him that he shouldn't be on the list because he wasn't worthy of a werewolf. He states this matter-of-factly, although the memories still hurt, thinking back to how Stiles had come back from the searching ceremony when he was 15, pale and shaking with both anger and pain.
What?
Derek jerks as if someone had stepped on his tail. Then he rubs both hands over his face. Of course, then my parents go and say the same thing, even though it was for entirely different reasons. But no, if he was a wolf, he'd be an alpha. People like him don't come along every day. I doubt it was anyone from the packs who told him that. Even if he doesn't match anyone, it's not because he's unworthy. Are people stupid? He adds, entirely indignant on Stiles' behalf. Sheriff Stilinski is watching this tirade in weary amusement. Then he sighs, leaning forward onto his elbows.
You have to understand, Eric, Stiles has never been popular. He's never had a lot of friends. He's a twitchy, clumsy boy who doesn't always have the impulse control not to say things he shouldn't, who gets obsessed with random topics, who's bad at sports and worse with girls. His father is the sheriff, and yeah, he takes flack for that. His mother died when he was 7, and yeah, some lesser species of primate used that to make him feel bad, too. He came home crying once when he was 9 because some other kid said, "Your mom hated you so much she died to get away from you." Kids are cruel to each other, and Stiles has spent the better part of his life soaking up that cruelty.
Derek bares his teeth at the comment about Stiles' mother. Among werewolves, that sort of insult most likely would have resulted in blood being spilled. But he gets himself under control. So now he doesn't believe it when someone's nice to him and likes his twitchiness and thinks his random topics are interesting or funny. There's a pause, and then he adds, "Okay, the clumsiness is a little terrifying. I'm always afraid that he's going to concuss himself."
"Join the club," Tom says. "I nearly had a panic attack when he decided to join the lacrosse team."
But yes, I think he could have eventually believed it from someone his age, someone a little less glamorous.
"He's on the lacrosse team?"
Derek asks, sounding a little strangled. Then the second part filters in.
"Wait, what?"
He's so baffled that he nearly dismisses it as something he misheard. "I mean, I can see the age thing, but..."
Tom looks amused again. "You don't look in mirrors often, do you?"
Derek looks away.
"I hate them. Ever since the..."
He swallows hard and just reiterates,
I hate them. Sheriff Stilinski thinks about this for a few moments. It's been years since the fire, but he remembers that night vividly, and he remembers the charred mess that had been pulled from the flames. Protocol when werewolves were involved in an accident was to provide any and all medical care, even if the body looked more like a corpse than a person. Even with his wolf healing, Derek had been in the hospital for months. He can see where his aversion for mirrors would come from, and it's obviously going to be necessary to tread lightly. Well, he says, then take it from a 44-year-old heterosexual man that your looks rate about an 11 on a scale of 1 to 10. You can get together with my sisters next time they pick out my haircut or try to dress me in something besides clothes I can work in. He clearly doesn't want to talk about it, but he does know how to be polite. But thank you for the compliment. After a moment to roll his eyes, Tom waves this aside. My point is just that he kind of got thrown into this, and he's trying to come to terms with it, but yeah, he does have a few self-esteem issues. There's a painful pause. A lot of self-esteem issues. Derek doesn't like that, of course, but he can't make it untrue. Then what should I do? It's not like I was being abnormally nice to him. Well, for him, it was abnormal, Tom says. But I don't think you did anything wrong. Nor do I think you should change anything. Just maybe try not to push so hard when he says stuff like that. Say something milder like, well, that's just your opinion, or we'll have to agree to disagree on that. Not, you're totally wrong and I think you're amazing. So we can't actually argue about it, Derek surmises, seeing the wisdom in this. Sheriff Stilinski nods. Yeah, just give him some time. I'm really glad you chose him, you know. A rare smile touches his face. I'm glad that someone else saw in him what I see in him every day. At this, Derek looks down, a bit shyly. I'm glad he fell into the room I was in. Of course, then he immediately tried to brain himself on the floor, but what can you do? Styles' father lets out a snort of laughter. Here's your next tip. Do something with him other than a movie in our living room. Ask him what he wants to do. That way he'll at least know that you want his opinion, even if he refuses to make a suggestion. Derek nods. I'm crap at this dating thing. Well, that's something the two of you have in common. Tom waves a hand at him. Go on, go make yourself useful somewhere. I have work to do. Derek nods again and stands up. Thanks again. Derek is a little surprised when Styles texts him a few days later. He hadn't initiated any conversation, wanting to give the teenager some space. It's a completely inconsequential text, too, about a funny picture he saw on the internet. Derek takes it as a sign that Styles is trying to make amends for having freaked out. He scours the internet for a funny picture to send in reply. 2 hours later, Styles texts him with, I'm reading about werewolves. True you can hear a packmate howling miles away? Derek finds this strangely encouraging. Yes, under the right conditions, a human can hear a wolf howl up to 70 square miles. We can add 10 or 20 to that easy. But you can tell who it is howling, right? Humans can't do that. True. Sometimes humans can learn gender and general age. Humans in a pack can learn the call of specific wolves over time. He doesn't mention that mates always know their mate's call, even if they're human. If Styles finds it on his own, that's fine. But Derek won't mention it before then. There's a long pause. Then Styles says, I just howled. Could you hear me? At first, Derek just gives a brief snort of laughter. He wonders if Styles had actually done it, and decides he most likely had. Then he considers all the information he could give Styles about how they've never found an adequate vocal equivalent for humans in the pack to howl, but that extreme emotions usually start to go both ways across the bond after a while, about how a pack can hear a human member screaming in pain or laughing in true joy, much further than the sound should actually carry, even if it isn't as far as a howl. In the end, he goes with, No, you doofus. You don't have the needed lung capacity or the right set of vocal cords. There's a long pause before an abrupt change of subject. Do you really pool all your money? Derek doesn't hesitate, because this is a matter of course for their lives.
Yes, obviously we keep some to provide for our own interests and hobbies, but the pack pools resources.
He sends that, then has to correct himself.
Accept allowances for kids. If you're too young to have income, you're too young to give any to the pack.
Does it bother people? I mean, your mom makes a lot more than you or your dad, right?
In our pack, no, we do it proportionally. Mom makes more, but she gives more. Someday I'm going to help Cora pay for college, even though I didn't go.
He hits send, then starts thinking and typing again.
Almost all packs pool resources. It's instinct. Some packs decide to go about it differently, and I've heard of there being some trouble, but mostly in non-family packs.
What about people who don't work?
They usually have good reasons, and their pack, we take care of them.
He thinks mostly of Peter. Sometimes Peter has money, and sometimes he doesn't. Nobody really knows where the money comes from, because he hasn't held down a steady job in years. None of them hold it against him.
What do you consider not working?
Dunno, just thinking about my options,
is Stiles' deeply mystifying answer.
Derek considers how to tackle that for a long moment, especially given the things that had been said the last time they had been face to face. Then he goes with,
"What kind of career are you thinking about?"
He still stands on his gut feeling that Stiles isn't the sort of person who would ever be content sitting on his ass.
"Some sort of cop, probably," Stiles replies. "Dad has two wolves on the force, you know."
Somehow, Derek isn't surprised to see that Stiles plans to take after his father, but he blinks at the second statement. It's the first time in this conversation that Stiles had voluntarily offered up information.
"I did know, but they're from neighboring packs, so I don't know them very well."
There's a long silence after that. It goes on for so long that Derek is starting to worry he's offended Stiles. He's lucky that work is quiet today. And since all his busy work is done, he's basically just sitting around unless the phone rings or a customer comes in. It occurs to him that Stiles is probably reading, and the next text confirms this as it changes the subject again. "Some packs are bigger than others, right?" The question seems deceptively simple to Derek, but there's not much he can do besides answer it.
"Yes, and they can change size."
"There are all sorts of laws about turning people," Stiles informs him, as if he may not know. "Like the circumstances where you can do it without consent if someone's dying or whatever." Given that Stiles is the son of the sheriff and wants to be a cop, it wouldn't surprise Derek if Stiles had those laws, plus full swaths of other laws, memorized. Derek also knows some of them, of course. Talia, being both an alpha and a lawyer, knows every detail there is to know about those laws. Some of them she had helped write. "Those laws are usually a good thing," he types. "The change is important. It comes with pack and instincts. Nothing about it is simple. It isn't a magic fix. Some people don't want it." He thinks about that because those were some of the moral issues, but there were also the practical issues. That makes him think about himself. Sometimes the healing isn't enough, and it only slows things down, prolongs pain, but won't save anyone. After a pause, Stiles replies, "You do know we're texting and you don't have to write me a novel, right?" Derek gives a snort and responds with an emoticon that Cora had basically designed for him, a comma, a colon, and then a straight line. "You sound like my sister." After a moment, he adds, "If you ask me a question, I'm going to answer it." Stiles doesn't dignify that with a response.
"So some packs have humans, right?"
"Yes." Derek sends that tiny, short answer just to tease Stiles after the previous exchange. But then he quickly starts typing again, because he already knows that this is an issue that should be discussed. "We've had humans in our pack before. Before the fire, I mean." He hates having to make this concrete in text, and his thumbs slow down a little, because apparently he can't talk about this without stuttering, even in text messages. But something tells him that Stiles needs to see or hear it. "Aunt Olivia, Peter's wife, was human."
"Are werewolf children always werewolves?"
Is it like a big deal if two werewolves have a baby that's human, like a squib or something? Derek gives a small huff that's both amusement at the joke and relief that Stiles hadn't pursued the subject of the fire. Born wolves always have werewolf children. Throw in a turned wolf or a human and you start rolling the dice. Our pack doesn't care if one of us is born human. We're still pack. I think most good packs are like that. Some packs are full of assholes, though. I read that if a human baby is born into a pack, they'll change them when they're too young to know better, Stiles replies, and it's legal because the parents can give consent for the baby. True? Derek's lip curls a little, because it does happen. Like I said, assholes. There's no law either way, but a lot of people agree that it isn't right. It's just hard to prove. I heard Dr. Deaton once say it was like assigning gender to an intersex baby, that you should always wait. Must come up a lot during squirrel rescue season, Stiles says. Derek sends the little emoticon again. Then he says, little known fact, Dr. Deaton has a degree in human medicine. Also, I will have you know that the squirrels are always grateful. He sends this before he can think better of it. Yeah, but why do you bother? I mean, you're a wolf under the skin, right? Why not just eat them? Do you eat squirrels and stuff? It takes Derek a moment to examine the wolf under the skin comment from all angles and decide how he wants to reply. We're wolves all the time, but humans all the time, too. Also, there's no point in eating them. They're more fur than meat. The tails. It gets stuck in the teeth. He sends this, then adds, no, I've never eaten a squirrel. And then after that, we do run deer and large game, though. Still, seems a little silly to let them go to waste, Stiles says. Sure to be worth it if you're hungry enough, right? They aren't wasted, Derek says with a snort. Pure wolves in the wild will eat anything they find come January if they're starving because winter has been hard. Werewolves will hunt down the car keys and go to the grocery store. Very Bear Grylls, Stiles replies, leaving Derek to wonder what on earth that is, and pondering whether or not a Google search is necessary. Before he can proceed, Stiles sends another text. I think you would prefer wild animals. No chemicals and stuff. Derek blinks at that. Most people don't actually think of things like that. Sometimes, you're right, we don't like chemical-filled meat, but we buy free-range meat. Wild animals taste different because they're eating wild things. No grains, more greens, flowers, etc. He thinks about telling Stiles that sometimes it isn't about preference at all, though. Sometimes it's about the need to hunt, to run with the pack on four paws and in nothing but their fur. About the thrill of the chase and the satisfaction of the kill. It's not really about violence or bloodlust like some people think, but it's about pack, about all of them working together without words, the sense of accomplishment that comes at the end of a hunt, the pack that can successfully bring down prey together and survive. But he's not sure that Stiles would be able to see past the violence of it yet. Some humans can get weird when faced with the reality that they're wolves as much as they're humans. So he just leaves his comment where it is. Any worry that Stiles might press the issue in regards to hunting is cleared up when he gets Stiles' next text. This one, however, opens up an entirely new can of indigestible worms. What if two pack members don't get along? Like, what if Cora picked a mate that you couldn't stand? How do you deal with it? The underlying question makes Derek's heart leap into his throat, because he's fairly sure that what Stiles is actually asking is how can I be part of your pack if your family doesn't like me? He takes a deep breath and types, we do our best to be civil to each other and get along best we can. The rest of the pack tries to understand that we won't play board games together. What if the alpha doesn't like somebody? Derek wonders how this had become his life. Then he remembers his mother, incidentally the alpha in question. On the other hand, at least Stiles is showing curiosity, which means that he's thinking about how he would handle being in the pack. The same way, the alpha shouldn't bar anyone from the pack unless they're harmful to the pack. A conflict of personality isn't harmful. His thumbs twitch, and he wants to add more, about mates and other circumstances, but he reins himself in. But the elf is the one who decides if a person's harmful or not, right? So really she could ban anyone she wants, is Styles' reply. It comes in several short bursts, like he's afraid if he hesitates to hit enter, he might not ask the question at all. Derek reads this and cringes. Ultimately, yes, but a good alpha isn't a dictator. He sends that, then adds, they can and will back down when they've made a bad call. He waits to see what Styles will do with that, hoping Styles doesn't keep pushing the issue until he's forced to admit that he would leave the pack if Talia won't allow Styles in. He's pretty sure that this will freak Styles out again. There's a long pause. Excessively long. So long that Derek starts to sweat. Then he gets, so is nodding a thing? He nearly chokes, gaping openly at the screen for a moment before jabbing at his keyboard. What? No! Then after a second thought, well, okay, maybe if you're into some really dirty, kinky porn. What are you reading? Stop! When Styles texts back, it's a web address, wolvesforyourpleasure.com. The link stares at Derek like a dare. Eventually, he shakes his head at his own stupidity, makes sure his phone is muted and that no one is standing behind him, and clicks on it. It's sort of like staring into the door to hell, if said door was lined with well-toned, oddly pierced, and well-oiled bodies, doing a lot of interesting things. Derek isn't the sort to watch a lot of porn, and he certainly hadn't seen any like this. On the other hand, he does now understand where the question about nodding came from. He closes the website. I have now learned four things. Only four? Styles replies. I've been on that site for like an hour and learned about a zillion. One, there are places I find piercings attractive that I wouldn't have expected. Derek says. Two, there are places that should just never be pierced. Three, no matter what else I might think of anything going on, I have to respect the way those people can control their shift. Four, and last, I don't want to know how you got onto that website. That's all you learned? Styles' text tone drips disappointment. Geez, I'll have to find you a picture book with small words. Derek frowns at the screen of his phone for a minute, although he's still mostly amused. I'm at work. I'm not surfing a porn site while I'm at work. So, I'm at school, Styles types. Oh, holy Jesus, Derek types. I think I saw a porno that started like this once, he adds, and hits send before he can overthink. You want me to find it? Probably on here somewhere. Sounds very educational. Derek just starts laughing. Then he tries to tell himself that he shouldn't let Styles find porn for him, even as a challenge. And now he's thinking about Styles' unfair fingers tapping away at his phone. I'm going to burn in hell, he mutters to himself. Eventually, he settles on texting, just as long as it's educational. Told you, learning about werewolves. Why during school? Derek asks curiously. The conversation has lasted far longer than a study hall. Why not? Styles replies. Aren't you in class? Derek knows that Cora will sneak in the occasional text here and there at the beginning or end of classes, but anything like this and her phone would have been taken away. Not at the moment, Styles replies, and that sits there like another dare. Derek decides to take it. What are you doing instead, then? Then realizes that the obvious answer to that question is going to be researching werewolves. Where are you, if not in class? I have all-day detention. For what? Derek can't help but ask curiously. Mouthing off to a teacher and using words she didn't know. Were they bad words? Derek asks. It doesn't surprise him at all to find out that Styles knows words that his teachers don't know. Depends on how you look at it. I call her a corpulent pustular troglodyte, but I think I use pustular wrong. Should have been pustulated. Oh, gross, Derek replies. Want to hear the kicker? Absolutely. I said it to my English teacher. I don't even know what to do with that. Derek is eventually forced to type, "Except be ashamed of your school." "At least the teacher supervising in-house doesn't care if I use my phone or my laptop," Styles texts back, "so I can keep myself occupied." Derek has a few things he could say about that, mainly wondering what he's supposed to do in an all-day detention if he's not allowed to use his laptop. But a customer comes in and has a bunch of questions about what kind of soil he needs to buy. When Derek gets back to his phone, he has another text that just says, "Thanks." He studies the text for a long moment, trying to decide if Styles is thanking him for answering the questions or something else. He decides to go with the same approach he takes with Peter and assume nothing. "For what?" "Keeping me from being bored," Styles replies. "You're welcome." Derek thinks about adding something else, but then remembers to slow his roll. All of his self-edits so far seem to have worked out, as the conversation hasn't faltered, and he's very interested in keeping Styles comfortable with him. Styles' room is never exactly neat, but when he's on a research binge, any hint of cleanliness is thrown to the wayside. He has books, pamphlets, and papers strewn everywhere. Currently, he's flopped on the floor, leaning against his wall, shuffling through different paperbacks. There's a knock on his door, and he absently says, "Yeah, come in." He doesn't look up, because he's highlighting in books he doesn't own with yellow and pink markers, and then he hears a female voice say, "Wow," and his head jerks around. Scott is standing there with his usual goofy grin, and Allison is behind him. They're both dressed casually, although Allison is in a short little skirt that draws attention to her amazing legs. "Hey," he says, somewhat idiotically. Scott raises his eyebrows, but he's still smiling as he says, "Ice skating? 4 o'clock? Sound familiar?" "Shit!" Styles looks around at his stacks of paper everywhere. "I got distracted." "That's okay," Allison says, sitting down on the edge of his bed. "What are you doing?" "Research," Styles says, his mouth full of marker. Then his face lights up. "Hey, you can help me out if you let me ask you lots of prying questions that you won't want to answer." "That's a sales pitch I definitely can't say no to," Allison says, laughing. Scott just groans. "Tell me that this isn't about that pamphlet about menstrual cycles that traumatized you." "No, it's about werewolves," Styles says. "And your dad does a bunch of anti-werewolf activism, so you might know stuff that I don't." Allison grimaces. "I might, but usually when my dad starts talking about that stuff, I leave the room." "Yeah, but your family founded one of the primary anti-werewolf groups in the country." Styles plows on, oblivious to her discomfort with the topic. "And see, here's the problem. I thought to myself, hey, if I have questions about all this werewolf stuff, I should just start looking stuff up. But I'm coming up with all this conflicting information. I'll read a textbook, but then find totally different stuff in an educational booklet, and then even different stuff on the internet. And a lot of groups, like WLO, say that the stuff put out by werewolf families is propaganda to entice people into packs, but at the same time, some of the prominent werewolf researchers say the stuff that WLO produces is hate literature full of lies, and so I don't know where to go to get answers." "Give us an example," Scott says, plopping into Styles' desk chair. "Okay," Styles says, and starts digging around in his papers, basically doing the breaststroke to swim across his floor. "Okay, here's a good example. So, like, there are laws about werewolves turning someone if their life is in danger. Some people have kind of the werewolf equivalent to DNR orders. You know, not to be turned into a werewolf ever. But if you look at where these laws come from, the WLO and their ilk make it seem like they were put in place primarily to protect people, and the werewolf culture makes it look like they were put in place to protect the werewolves. Like, because a guy sued a werewolf for turning him, and the werewolf was like, well, excuse me for saving your life, douchebag." Scott frowns faintly. "How much Adderall have you had?" "What? I don't know. A lot? Anyway," Styles says, not missing a beat. "I have to admit that the WLO makes it sound like alphas are just hanging around hospitals,
waiting to pounce on dying people and abscond with them into a life of werewolfism and iniquity, which doesn't actually make sense, given that only alphas can turn people, and there are, like, he shoves stacks of papers around. It depends on the population, but in rural areas, there's about one werewolf for every 1,000 people, and one alpha for every 20-some-odd werewolves, so that's, like, he counts on his fingers. So Beacon Hills has about 50,000 people, which means there's about 50 werewolves within city limits, which leaves 2.5 alphas, but we can round up to 3. Get to the point, Scott says. Well, okay, my point is still that there are 3 alphas in Beacon Hills and 50,000 people, so they can't exactly be sitting around waiting for people to get in near-fatal accidents so they can snatch them up for their packs. The denser the population, the less likely you are to have werewolves because they like their space, and that means they would actually have further to travel if someone got hurt. Styles. Right, my point is that the WLO is full of shit, Styles says, then looks at Allison and says, sorry. You think I don't know that? Allison says, skeptically. My parents used to bring me to those protests when I was a kid. They would have me holding signs before I could read enough to know what the signs said. You have no idea how pissed my father is at me right now just because I'm dating someone whose best friend is mated to a werewolf. There's 3 degrees of separation between me and the werewolf, and he's still mad at me. Scott winces. Sorry? Don't be sorry, Allison says, flipping her hair over her shoulder. I hate it when he gets like that. There's no reason for it. The problem, Styles says, is that, okay, that's one example.
But then there's a ton of conflicting evidence about how werewolves choose their mates, why werewolves choose mates, what being mated into a pack is like, and this kind of stuff is important, and now I don't know what information I can trust, where to get the answers that I feel like I need. Scott chews on that for a minute. Did you ask Derek? I actually did, Styles says, and I got some answers that basically mirror what the werewolf culture texts tell me. I think textbooks would be more accurate than this stuff, Allison says, nudging a pamphlet with her foot. Well, yeah, except the textbooks have all been written by werewolves, so you can sort of see them having reason to fit, Styles says. I mean, if the WLO is right about anything. And there are some things that suck, but I'm not sure whose fault they are. Like, everyone's jealous of me, right? But the way some of this stuff makes it sound, it's like there never would have been anyone else for Derek. That if he hadn't met me, he would have been alone. And that freaks me out, to be honest. He rubs his hands over his hair. But you've got these How to Get a Werewolf Mate pamphlets, and they aren't put out by the WLO. I mean, the WLO and their type want to keep humans as far away from werewolves as possible. So where is this shit coming from? Because it paints an entirely different picture about how to get a mate. I mean, did you guys know that there are perfumes made that are specifically designed to appeal to werewolves? Competing brands, even, with lots of big scientific words in their ads. And books about the way you should move, the kinds of stuff you should say during the searching ceremony that will attract a werewolf. Scott thinks about it. And it's not like you did any of this stuff. Right. Styles takes a deep breath. So this thing with me and Derek, it can't be. If you say it isn't real, I will slap you silly, I swear to God, Scott says. Keep up that pretense with Derek to keep it from getting more serious than you're comfortable with if you want, but don't even try that bullshit on me. Dude, for real, that guy has it bad for you. Styles scowls at him. You've met him all of once. Actually, I've met him like 6 times, and yeah, he's a brooding, surly guy who glares a lot and wears leather, but he is not the kind of guy who picks out a random teenager to use as a beer. At most, if he really wanted to do that to get his parents off his back, I can see him approaching you and saying, wow, I really need my parents to cut this shit out. Would you mind playing along with this? And then, if you agreed, doing the whole thing. But he wouldn't ambush you like that. Come on, Styles. You know that. You're just being chicken shit. There's a long silence while Stiles fiddles. Yeah, maybe, he finally says, and changes the subject. You see my point, though, with the how to win a werewolf stuff. If that's not right, where is it coming from? Because that's why my life sucks right now. Everyone thinks it's a joke because I shouldn't be attracted to werewolves, except that apparently I am, or something. Now that's all messed up. Probably the people publishing it think it's romantic, Allison suggests. They're just misguided. Yeah, Stiles tosses a pamphlet across the room. He's not sure how to explain why it bothers him so much. Maybe he's just overthinking it because of the tangle that currently comprises his life. Screw it, I need to get out of this house. Ice skating it is. Allison rises to her feet. But seriously, back when my dad had me indoctrinated into the anti-werewolf school of thought, I had to do a lot of the same things. Find the real information underneath all the propaganda. I didn't do it like you did, though. You have to get to know them as people. That's how you'll know what they're like. You're not going to find your answers in books, Stiles. You'll find them in the pack. She leans over to give him an embrace, and Stiles returns it, startled. She smells nice, like lilacs, and he hugs her back for a minute before she lets go and smiles at him. Not for the first time. He's glad that Scott found somebody so amazing. Allison links hands with him and kisses him on the cheek so he won't feel left out. He turns pink. You know, Stiles says, in some ways, I think you're a lot smarter than I am. Scott laughs, and he does not say that every day.